Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein. And this week we have a wonderful program. We have with us Rav Yaakov Feitman, the famous Rav of the Five Towns, and Mechaber Sfarim, a Talmud of Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, Zecharo Livracha. And we will be speaking about physician-assisted suicide, euthanasia. We will also have on the same topic Rabbi Weiner. He's the rabbi, besides being a Rav of a show, he's also the Rav of Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles, one of the largest hospitals on the West Coast. And he'll be speaking about similar concepts. It's been passed into law in L.A., and the physicians have to do it when requested, many halachic shilas. We're on there on Matzah Shabbos, 11 to 12 midnight, on WMCA, 570 a.m., and on the Nachum Segal Network, again on Nachum Segal, 11 a.m. Monday morning. You can find all our programs at headlinestorah.com or on our hotline, 732-806-8700, where you can listen to past programs and also leave messages. You can email any questions to info@headlinesbook.com. Now, here's something very interesting. You know, we get so many emails and calls, many of them really highly intelligent, many of them, by the way, which disagree with me. So what we decided, also people want to know, where are you, Mara Makaymith? I get, where is this tshuva you mentioned? Where is this Gemara? What's the Makara for this? What's the source? So we now have on the website, on Headlines Torah, under after each program, there's a little button, and it says Mara Makaymith, which means sources. And if you click on that, it'll take you to a page where the tshuvas, the discussion, the tshuvas we mention, if it's a tshuvas, a Rajba, Radvaz, etc., we'll bring it, the Gemaras. We will also have a vast trove of, you know, last week we spoke about Tchelis. We have the booklet on Tchelis that was Rabbi Barkin wrote. You can download the entire booklet or read it on the site. We will also be printing the emails that we get, not all of them, but select emails, as well as the voicemails. And because I think that it's becoming like just a big virtual base medrash. And if you like a certain particular program, you can download it. And the next week you could learn with your son on Shabbos the program. And, you know, if it interests you or you want to look, maybe I misquoted something or you have a different understanding of it. So I do want to warn you that when you send an email or a voicemail, we will be publishing many of them. We will be posting them because my attitude is most people are proud of their opinions. And I will also print those that disagree with me. You know, the first Misa in the Torah, the first death is by Hevel. Hevel was killed by Cain. And the Mefarshim will ask, I believe it's the Kli Yakar, he says, what chait did Hevel do? And he says, Hevel, because we know Ein Misa B'li Chait, he says, Hevel's chait was the Hevel Hevi Gamhu. He imitated Cain. And we know that Yiddishkeit, Judaism, believes that each of us, Adam Nivra Yechidi, all of us were created like Adam as a unique, one-time, chad-pamit event, an individual, right? And based on that, we are all have our own opinions. We're required to have our own opinions. If we wouldn't, we would be redoing the chait of Hevel, of a Hevel Hevi Gamhu. And you know the story, I don't know if I've said it before, forgive me if they say there was this rabbi, this young fellow became a rav of a shul someplace out of town, and it was the first yomtiv, and they said the piyutim. It was a big fight. Half the shul got up by the piyutim and started screaming, stand, stand, and the other half started saying, sit, sit, and they looked to the rabbi, what are we doing? This poor rav, I don't know where he came from, this poor, you know, 30-year-old fellow. So he said, after shul, he said, let's go find the oldest guy in the nursing home. There's a guy, his name is Reb Yankala, he's 105. He lives in the nursing home. Let's go ask him what the minig is. So they go, 20 of each side goes, and they come to Rabbi Yankel. Rav says, Rabbi Yankel, what did we do? You say your side. These 20 start screaming, we stood, we stood, we stood. And the other side says, no, we... And this fellow looks at them, and he shakes his hand, Rabbi Yankel. No, we didn't stand. So the other guys get up and said, that's right, we sit, we sit. Rabbi Yankel looks at them, and he shook his head. He said, no. So they looked at Rabbi Yankel. So this our minig is not to stand, not to sit. What was our minig? And he said, our minig was to argue. And that is the Jewish way. The Jews always believe, and I will post a line that you were from Reb Moshe, where somebody wrote him up and disagreed with him, and he asked the Mechil 100 times. And Reb Moshe says the whole derech of Kabbalah Satayr from the time, from the beginning, was a Kabbalah of debate and questioning. And he says, if you disagree with me and you have Makairis and you have Rias, write to me, and that is absolutely, that is our Masaira. So when people disagree with me, I absolutely, as long as it's done respectfully, I will post it, print it, I will embrace you. I want to put in one quick mention of headlines, too. Here's a letter I got this week from H. Mars. I now learn it b'chavrusa with my son every Shabbos. It creates debate and a real relationship with him. So thank you, Mr. Myers. What's my point? Headlines, too. If you want to have interesting things to discuss, you want to be up on the current topics, go out and buy Headlines, too. Very reasonably priced, $10.99 at your local farm store. Before we get to our excellent guests, I'd like to say a little Dvar Torah. It's going to be a modern Dvar Torah. Koirach. This week is Koirach. You know who Koirach is? He's the rebel. Authority. Who wants authority? I think a lot of us could appreciate this. We want self-expression. Why do we need leaders, principles, governors, laws, rules? It just damps down. I want to be free. I want to be able life without limits. Right? Kol ha'eza kulam kedoshim. I know what to do. U'b'saychem Hashem, madua tisnasu. Why do we need you to tell us what to do? Why are you stifling our liberties? Anybody who's gone to a yeshiva, a school, and has had a bad teacher, a rebbe, and principal, who hasn't, remembers just chafing. What are you telling me what to do? I know you're wrong. And many of them, sadly, were wrong. Right? So inherently, we all chafe at, we don't want to be told what to do. And it chafes us. So wouldn't life be great without authority? You know, there's something called the Williams Syndrome. The Williams Syndrome is some type of psychological syndrome of people who don't have boundaries, no authority. And what do? A woman who had a child who had the Williams Syndrome was with a bunch of friends, and one of them said to her two kids, "Who wants ice cream?" So her two kids said, "We do." And this little kid said, "Oh, I also do." So the two kids got in the van, and this kid got in the minivan, and they drove off, and his mother didn't realize that the third kid was in the van. And the first mother went ahead and she did a search. She called the police, missing persons, and a half an hour later she gets a call. "Do you know my child is with me?" And the woman who was driving the van was actually fuming. She says, "Why don't you watch your children? I almost had a heart attack. I didn't." And this woman said, my child doesn't have boundaries. It's a syndrome. You know where we have that today? You know, the head of Uber, Travis Kalanick, by the way, unsurprisingly, is a Jew. His mother was Bloom, so we know that all change in the world, right, comes from the dissenter, from the Kala Olam Me'ever Echad V'Hum Me'ever Sheni, the person who says, wait, why is everybody using a car service when I could create one app that will put all car services, taxis, out of business forever? Right, that's the mind of the dissenter, of the Aver, Kala Oila Mi Aver Echad, the 99-in-1, the 0.02% of the world's population that has created more solutions than the other 99.8, right? But this guy, Kalanick, has a Koirach, unrestrained, no limits. So what's it like? If you read in the news, they have a team of psychologists on the staff of Uber to play games with their drivers' brains. Because it's them against their drivers. The drivers make a little bit more than minimum wages. And how do you, because they take 30%, you know, regular business works at a 10% margin, 8%, 15%. They take 30% off the top of it. So the drivers end up making a little bit more than minimum. But how do they keep them? So they're always playing these psychological games. Before a drive is finished, they already send to the next one. So it's like a drug. What, am I going to stop now and I could get it on? And they create all these goals, absurd. It's an entire team of psychologists playing with their drive brains. There was recently a blog posted by a girl who worked there. She said on her first day on the job, and her boss came over to her and asked her to have marital relations in an illicit way. And he said, that's the rule here. If you work here, there's just no respect for women. It's without boundaries. We take what we want. Became a big, which is one of the reasons. They had something called gray ball at Uber. Evade regulatory scrutiny. What they would do is put all the phone numbers of all the inspectors. Today online you can get almost anything. There's so much data. And if what in a town where they weren't allowed to operate, such as Boston or many towns, Boston, Vegas, Paris, whole countries, if anybody who was part of the government or a police officer would dial an Uber, it would immediately, the system would show all cars in the area as busy. It was called Grayball. An entire huge industry, Uber, based without any respect of boundaries. And ultimately, who does it destroy? It destroys the employees who earn minimum wages. And Uber was recently evaluated, it's a company that's 4 years old, at $70 billion because of this concept. We don't want authority. We don't want rules. We want to do what we want. It could be very dangerous for a society. And what happens? It says at the end of the story of Kairach, Hashem said, put all your yotzeis together and the one who I choose, and Mata Aaron had shkedim. So I saw a fabulous medrash. The medrash says, one side of Aaron's matzah had bitter almonds, and one side had sweet almonds. And here's how I understand it. Amund is called shakade, which means, what's a shakdin? Diligence. You know, there's bitter almonds and sweet almonds. Bitter almonds is fatal. I think it's 25 almonds eaten, the person would die. There's cyanide in them. Sweet almonds are considered the healthiest nut there is, the lowest calorie, the highest protein, etc. So it took great diligence to decide, is it a dangerous or is it not? Mata Aaron had on one side shkedim that was sweet and one side bitter. And you know what the message was? It's true we want to bring up children that can flourish and not be fearful and live life to the limit. On the other hand, life without limits could be very dangerous. Life is about balance. There's the bitter almonds, there's the sweet almonds. You need to have a mata, you have to have a reish hamata, a guide to tell you, what is the bitter almond? What is the sweet almond? When is it good to fulfill all your expectations, your dreams, your goals? And when is it, wait, that could be a little bit dangerous. And that is, so you want to revoke leadership, Kairach? Madua tisnasu, why should you be tisnasu? Because in life we do need guidance. It's great to have tremendous dreams, but you have to have a mata. What's the bitter? What's the sweet? Let's go to our fabulous guest. We have the honor of having with us on the phone a very famous machanach. He's been in chinuch for over 40 years. He's a Talmud Muvik of Hagoyin Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner, somebody who I was zeichet to be mishamish too, and he was given the honor of working on the Pachad Yitzchak. Today he's also the Mara D'Astra of Kehillas Beis Yehudit Tzvi of Cedarhurst. Welcome, Rav Yaakov Feitman.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Rav David.
So, Rav Feitman, recently in the news, there's been some major articles in the New York Times, but it's been in the news and it's an ongoing theme about euthanasia for seriously ill end-of-life patients. And what I would like to ask you is, if there's a doctor in a hospital, and let's say it's in an area where it's legal, and he has a patient who's terminally ill, who's, for all practical purposes, I guess you could say he's a geisus, and he's not a Yehudi. We know by a Yid that the halacha is that, you know, the Mechaber, I think it's in Shin Lamed Tes, says that a geisus, Yehiri geisus, is chayiv misa v'dei shamayim. Maybe it depends if he's a treif or not, but certainly it's asa. But if he's not a Yehudi, and he says, doctor, I'm in terrible pain, can you please terminate my life now? Can you perform euthanasia? So there's been articles, you know, talking about it, giving accolades about this new way of dying, of entering into death with dignity, etc. And I know that's a topic that you've worked on. Could you give us a little bit of your hashgaf on it? Because it's a controversial topic, not only by the Umay Salem, but by Klal Yisrael too.
Right. So ironically, you mentioned the New York Times article. It happened to have been a Jewish doctor that recently not only performed euthanasia, but quite prominently, she's done over 35 what she calls and other people call mercy killings. And it's interesting, she's a woman that was previously an OBGYN and has also performed, for better or worse, many bris milah. She's proud of that also. And she says that it's the same thing. She brings people into the world and she brings people out of the world. And she feels that it's the right thing to do. So interestingly, there is a dot, in my opinion, a das yachid on this, but I have to, I think, mention him because I'm going to disagree with him, and I think most Paiskim do. There was a yid, I haven't heard much from him in many recent years, but Shmuel Baruch Verona, he was a son of Rabbi Yaakov Meisher Chalap.
He was my uncle.
I did not know that.
An extended uncle, but we called him uncle. He was whatever. So
yeah.
I knew him very well, and I ate by him. He was out there in Tel Aviv for maybe 40 years.
Oh, yeah. Big Talmud Chacham.
Yeah.
So he actually was Medayik because the famous Stira, what seems to be a Stira, and I say seems to be because most Achroidim hold that it's not really a Stira, is between the story of Rav Chanina ben Trajan, where the death of Rav Chanina ben Trajan, it's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Ches, and it's in the Masechta Kala with a slightly different version. But, of course, he was in great pain, and the executioner, the Gemara calls him the Klatz the Nire, the different versions of the two Gemaras. So he said to his executioner, to his what seemed to be his tormentor, so his tormentor offered to hasten his death. Now, the Lashon over there was that he said, if I add shalheves, I add fire, and I take away the things that are withholding your death, because the evil Romans had put sfugin shel tzemer, these tufts of wool that were soaking in water, so they didn't allow him to die. So when his Talmidim said, Rebbe, why don't you open your mouth and swallow the flames, and therefore you'll die? So he said, Chas v'shalom. He said, the one that gave life has to take away life. And, you know, Mutter Yitlenu Mi Shenosra V'yafalu V'atzmai. I'm not allowed to do that. But when the Klatzenira, the Roman, said, can I do it? So he said, yes. So he said, that he further asked him, and the Lashon of there is, will you bring me to Olam Haba? Will you grant me eternal life for that? He said, so Rav Chanina ben Trajan said yes. And then further he said, will you swear to it? Hishavali Nishmaloi. And then he did it. So he was granted this wish, and a voice went out from Shemayim, Yotze Vaskavom, Rav Chanina ben Trajan v'chal tzanira, mezumona mei l'chai olam haba. So he becomes a hero. On the other hand, the fellow that ended up killing Shaul HaMelech fell on his sword, and this is where it gets a little bit delicate. There was a Ger Amaleki who finished off Shaul HaMelech. And then later on, when David HaMelech found out about it, and the Ger Amaleki, he was apparently Jewish. So he said, and because you killed Shaul, you're going to die, and David HaMelech had him executed. So your uncle, your extended uncle, Rav Shmuel Baruch Vroner, says, how do we resolve this theory with this apparent contradiction? So he says it's very simple, because the Ger Amaleki was in fact a Jew. No, the issue of him being a Ben Ger Amaleki is a very interesting one. The Meshech Chachma deals with it, that in the Kabum Ger Me'amalek. So if you want, we can discuss that. But Lamasa, say he seems to have been a Jew, and because he was a Jew, he was not allowed to do that. It's murder. And on the other hand, for a guy, so he times that for a non-Jew, it is not forbidden. The only thing that's forbidden under the Sheva Mitzvahs, the seven Noahide laws, is what's considered murder by a society. So you mentioned very correctly, and I think that it's relevant over here, at least according to this opinion, is that if it's permissible in a particular state, it's not permissible right now in the entire United States, but it is permissible, let's say, in some states, and this case that the New York Times reported on was actually in Canada, where it is permissible now, as long as the patient, it's clear that the patient was of sound mind and wanted it, the patient was in great pain, everything was tried medically to save him, so then it is permissible to end his life because under the laws of Dinim, because the law of it would be like Sirta for a Bed Melach, but on the other hand, it's also in, under the laws of Dinim, so it's Chavallah to make some kind of a wound, so it's only forbidden if it's against the person's will and it's done maliciously. It's done in a way that's evil. Well, this is not considered to be evil, at least according to some laws. So that's Rabbi Vrona's take on it. The truth is that most of the Paiskim, it seems to me, disagree with him. It's interesting. There were two pieces by sort of chief rabbis. One of them, the chief rabbi Lau, who was just retired, and by Rav Simcha Cohen Cook, who is still the Rav of Rehovot, they both, I believe, said the exact same thing, and they put many, many proofs. If you'd like, I don't know how much time we have, I can cite them. And that is that the issue was not over here. By Shaul HaMelech, he actually killed him. But the issue by Rav Hanina Vetraja was that the Klatzdemira fellow, the Roman, only removed what we called Hasaras Ammonia. In other words, there was something preventing his death. So for that, we have many, many riots, many proofs that preventing the death is not actual kill.
Says, I think you mentioned, Rav Eichmann, that the Gemara says he was Marba Bishalheves. So Marba Bishalheves is clearly doing something affirmative, which would be usher, according to the Rabban Shalamadeth.
That's my kasha also, and I agree with you. You're always on the ball, Rav David. I totally agree with you. So since the Lashon is that he did both, he was Marba Bishalheves, and he removed the tuft of wool, so it would seem that he was given permission to do so by Rav Hanina Mitrajan. Rav Hanina Mitrajan did not want to do it himself. He allowed the other person to do it, and he allowed him to do an actual maisa, an actual action, because
let me just give a little color that the Rama, I believe it's, I don't have a Shulchan Aruch, but I believe it's in Shin Lamed Tes, says that by a geisis, Malach is, you're allowed to be moiser amayneya. It's based upon a seifa chasidim that you're allowed to remove an impediment that is preventing death if the person is in pain. And all the contemporary paiskim accept this Rama. But to do something affirmative, like the Rama says, to pull out a pillow or to put salt on his thing, that would not be allowed. So clearly Marba Shalhevis would be asa, lalacha, and you see that he was Marba Shalhevis, so that's your question on Rav Lau. Can I, Rabbi Feitman, maybe it's my uncle, it's an extended uncle, but maybe take his side on this, and let me present to you a svara. I believe I heard this once from Moshe Sternbach too, the Rav of Yerushalayim. But there's a chilek, and I think this chilek is brought by Kadmainim, by prior Paiskim of, you know, many generations ago, that they say that chilek between the Zion mitzvahs b'nei noach, the seven Noahide laws, and the rest of the Torah, and by the way, the Rambam seems to imply in Perek Beis of Hilchos Reitzeach, that killing by a goy is als the sheva mitzvahs b'nei noach, if not also seretzach, right? So they're different. That the seven mitzvahs b'nei noach is the washing of the paiskim is that without the seven mitzvahs b'nei noach, ish yisroyeyu chayim b'loy, people would swallow each other alive. There would be no law and order. There would be no respect. There would be no boundaries. There would be no community. It would be impossible. So these are halachas enoshias, lichyos chayim normaliyim. The world has to have a tzura and a tafkid. So therefore, one of the tzuras of the world is shofer dam adam ba'adam. We have to have a respect of people's lives. So therefore, in a case where, on the contrary, respect for a person's life would require that the life be terminated, the person is in terrible pain, al that halacha would be muta. But by Klal Yisrael, it loisirtzach is not also sheva mitzvahs b'nei noach. Our Kabbalah mitzvahs, much of it is chayk, we don't understand, it's infinity, it's l'mayla me'asaga enoishis, the mitzvahs aloikis. So by a guy, the isser is al shevach tamadam, is because this is the boundaries of normal life. Well, it would fit into the boundaries of normal life. And that would explain the halacha of Hanina ben Tradian. He told the guy, you could b'marbe b'shalheves, because your mitzvah is only al sheva mitzvahs b'nei noach, but not, I'm not allowed to open my mouth and hasten my own death, because that would be an iser, ma'abaras m'udas is over alay sirtach, and that would be al the Torah alay kiss that's given to Klal Yisrael, which is beyond seichel anoshis, and I'm not allowed to, and that prep, and I believe I heard a svara, maybe something like that from Rav Sternbach. And I think it's very relevant because I'll give you an example where this is Megea very much Salacha. Let's say you have it's very problematic, let's say, according to, for a guy to kill an Uber, to permit to perform an abortion.
Let's say you have a
Jewish doctor, and he's a delivery doctor, and he has a Goyish patient who has a child who's giving childbirth, and if he doesn't abort the child, the mother would die. So by the Umes Olam, there's no din, very possibly, there's no din of a Chai Bohem, and he wouldn't be allowed to do it if there would be an Issa Ritzicha to kill a Gaish Uber, right? But on the other hand, if Lahalacha, he would be allowed to, because it's to save a mother that doesn't go into Shaifich Tam Adam Adam, he would be allowed to. So I'm just presenting Rav Shmuel Baruch Werner's tzad on just giving some color to it, perhaps.
Right. No. And it's very, very true. I think that he really does go in that direction to make the distinction between the svara of the Sheva Mitzvahs and the Jewish approach. If you see his piece in the Torah Shabbat, and I think he published it somewhere else as well, you can see it. There's another aspect to this also, which I think is that when his Talmidim, Rav Hanina ben Trajan's Talmidim, suggested to him, why don't you open your mouth? So Rav Hanina ben Trajan said no, because for us suicide is clearly forbidden, because there's a drasha leisirtzach leisisratzach, which turns it into a hispoil, which means one is not allowed to commit suicide. Now the Rechaz Chinuch does not hold like that, but he seems to be a das yachid, and the psikta says beferish that there's such a drasha. But in fact, as you say, for the bnei noach, it's quite possible that a person would be allowed in such a situation to commit suicide, and what it's called, physician assisted suicide. That's how they call it. Even though the doctor is doing it, but in some strange fashion, like a shlichus of the patient. So for a yid, if one accepts the drush of lo sirtzach lo sisratzach, which most places can do, Rav Zevin Zatzal has in the Laor Halacha a very interesting piece on it. He actually gives an entire page to this drasha, lesirtach lesisratach. But the Mechaz Chinuch disagrees. He says there's no such drasha. He doesn't accept it. He doesn't hold of it. Whatever it is. So therefore, there is no separate prohibition of suicide. And certainly for Gentiles, the drasha wouldn't. Let's even if they have lesirtach as one of the shefanis of Bnei Noach, there certainly wouldn't be a drasha on it. That's what it seems. So, on the other hand, there are Rishonim that hold, that's the famous Machlokes Rishonim, if the Sheva Mitzvahs are exactly the way that we have them, and if we have a let's say, an Avera called do not kill, so it's the same for them. So if we have an Avera of do not commit suicide, they would have it also. But if you hold it to Drasha, and the Drasha doesn't apply to them, so then in all these cases, a non-Jewish doctor, let's say for a minute, looking at it from the Sheva Mitzvah's perspective, would be permitted to end the life if it's a moral, ethical thing to do. But again, I have to say that many places can disagree with your great uncle, and they have different terutzim for what the contradiction is between Rav Hanina ben Trajan and Shaul HaMelech. So that, either it's a Saras HaMenei apart or other, other considerations. So, but not that it's not sufficient to say that a guy doesn't have this particular prohibition. So my take on it would be in general also, we said with Yaakov Kamenetsky, that's how we used to talk about this crystal of Yiddish stuff, and we have to be very careful about what happens in general society to see how it affects us. So to be in favor of euthanasia of any form would eventually redound badly to us as well, because we would, like this Jewish doctor, her name is Dr. Green, you know, she thought that this is a wonderful thing to do. It happened to have been a non-Jew that she was doing. It was a former Catholic priest, actually, that she recently finished off. But eventually, a Jewish doctor doing it to a Jewish person. And we have to be very careful about that, I think, not to be lackadaisical about this, and to say that it's permissible. That would be my take on it.
Well, thank you very much, Rabbi Fiveman. It's been an honor to have you with us.
It's been my pleasure, and mazel tov on the second volume of your wonderful work.
Thank you very much. We have on the phone with us, from Los Angeles, California, Rabbi Weiner, who's the Rav of the Beverly Wood Shul in Los Angeles. He's also the senior rabbi of Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, which means he sees a lot of medical shilas. And he's the author of the Guide to Medical Decision-Making. That's the Jewish Guide, the Halachas of Jewish Medical Decision-Making. He's a musmach of Rav Zalman Nechemiah Goldberg, Rav Shlomo Zalman's son-in-law, Begayin Eretz Yisrael. Welcome, Rabbi Weiner.
Thank you, thank you. It's an honor. I am a big fan of your show, and you do a very wonderful service for Klal Yisrael.
Thank you, Rabbi Weiner. So talk to me, as somebody who is the rabbi of what is maybe the largest medical center in the area, tell me some of the shilas that you come across as a senior rabbi.
Well, there's a lot of shilas. I mean, I could just give you a list. Right now, the most common one, which perhaps we could talk about in more depth soon, is physician-assisted suicide, which is now legal for over a year in California.
On physician-assisted suicide, what do you do when you ask the question?
Okay, so there's two aspects to it. There's the halachic issues and the pastoral issues. I can tell you, since it became legal in the last year, and we've seen a number of cases in our hospital already, we've faced some halachic questions that we weren't expecting. I mean, it's postured in some ways that, you know, it's usur. We don't accept physician-assisted suicide. It's not allowed, and we don't advocate for it, and we're against it. And so we thought that was it. We're just opposed to it. But, I mean, us as from Jews. But as it's been happening, we've seen new shilas that came up. So I'll give you an example. One of them is that many states have an obligation for physicians to inform patients of their end-of-life options. So when the options were, you know, palliative care, hospice, things like that, sometimes it is mutter, and it wasn't as much of a dilemma for the doctors. When one of the things that a doctor has to inform their patients about is their option to commit suicide, it becomes a much bigger dilemma for a doctor to handle. In fact, when that first started, we actually brought Rav Asher Weiss out from Eretz Yisrael to speak to our doctors about that question.
What did he say?
He gave a very interesting answer. People were expecting, you know, we were opposed to this bill. We were not excited about this new law allowing patients to commit suicide, and you know, we've just been opposing it. So he had a very nuanced answer. He said, you know, it's simple. Not only do I think it's okay for you to be the one to share this option with them, I think it's better for a firm Jew to share the information. He says, obviously, you can't actually perform it or be involved with prescribing the medications, but if the patient's going to ask about it, the patient's going to hear about it, they're better off hearing about it from someone who's concerned about it and doesn't advocate for it and push it on them, but rather shares it in a nuanced, cautious way and also shares the downsides to it.
Did he mention the shaila, which our other guests spoke about, whether for a guy it's also usher to do physician-assisted suicide?
No, it didn't come up.
Okay. So
it has come up.
So I'll tell you, I was just in Eretz Yisrael, and I sat with the Ravid, Rav Sternbuch, and he wrote a tshuva on it where he had the head of a hospital when he was the head, the Rav of South Africa, and they believed in physician-assisted suicide there too. And I believe, and I'm going to post the tshuva online. You know, I might as well say it here. You know, we have a new program that we're attaching to the end of every show, Amar Makaymis, where you could click on and see the tshuvas and any emails that we get that we think worthy. We'll put up so we could actually create like a media site for people to discuss these very new shilas. And Rav Sternbuch Paskins, and I don't want to say Paskins because it's a very nuanced psak, but he says that for a guy where the Isser is only also Zayin Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, so he says it's not a Zavar Achzari. On the contrary, it's considered a Hamasas Chesed, a mercy, to do killing if a person is in deep pain, and therefore he says a Goyisha doctor would be allowed to, so the director of a hospital who's Jewish would be allowed to authorize a Goyisha doctor to do it. Did Rabbi Weiss discuss that at all or no?
It didn't come up. Rav Zilberstein has a similar psak in his sefer. But I think that it might, you know, for political reasons, and maybe, you know, speaking in a public forum, and also when we as a group are trying to limit or prevent the explosion of this act, so many people taking advantage of physician-assisted suicide, we didn't want to kind of nuance it so much and share that, well, sometimes it could be allowed in some ways. We wanted to kind of prevent the united front.
Okay. Very good. So give us your next big question. Physician-assisted suicide, Klaus Shilas.
So
what's your next big one?
So another one that came up within this one we were not expecting. So one of the issues with physician-assisted suicide is that they have to show DMC, which means decision-making capacity. And there's a lot of laws. In fact, the Aguda was very helpful with drafting the California laws. So you have to, a patient to do this has to have two physicians sign off. They're attending and a consultant. A mental health specialist is consulted if necessary. There's a 15-day waiting period between physicians signing off. They have to fill out all these forms and documentation. They have to determine decision-making capacity and that they're acting voluntarily and that they're fully informed of the risks and other options. And they have to have witnesses that express that they're of sound mind and there's no coercion.
Before they can commit suicide, you're saying?
Before they can do this, they have to show they're completely they're completely doing it beratzon. So we had a you know, traditional Jewish patient who did this, and his family was from. They were very, you know, obviously sad that he did this. And then they went to contact an Orthodox cemetery where they wanted to bury him, and all of a sudden we had a shaila, because we know that a ma'avid atzma ladas, we don't bury them in a Jewish cemetery.
You don't sit shiva. The machlok is Ramban and Rambam. Yeah, and there's no kri on him. There's no shiva on him. It's machlok is Ramban and Rambam. The Ramban paskins you do, but the Rambam paskins you don't. And I believe the Mechaba paskins like the Rambam, right? So
normally
so
we come up with, you know, it was anos. They're having psychological problems. You know, they're depressed. It's difficult. You know, we don't know what's going through their minds. Maybe they did tshuva at the last second, and we find a way. The Aruch HaShulchan says, you know, we always find a way that we can assume that there was some extenuating circumstances, and we bury them in a Jewish cemetery. But in this case, I mean, it's clear that they knew what they were doing, and they were very clear about it with Adim, everything. So this was a big shiloh.
Wow, what an interesting shiloh. So what do you do?
So we looked for different Mari Makomos. We first asked the local post game, and then we ended up bringing it also to Rav Asher Weiss. And the first thing we found, there's an interesting Besamim Rosh, which is a challenge, because the Besamim Rosh is
The Besamim Rosh is so disputed, but go ahead, tell. It's a fascinating Besamim Rosh. Share it with everybody.
Right, so the Besamim Rosh is quoted in the Pesachei Tshuva. And he says, you know, kol she'osei kemi ribui tzarosav, dagos v'yisurim, and he says even oni gamur, that's not ma'avid atzma ladas, and we could bury them, and we don't, you know, we assume that that's their anos, that, you know, their pain. But yeah,
he
even right there in the
brings a raya from, I believe, Shaul HaMelech. He brings a raya that he was ma'avid atzma yisurim. He brings a raya from the 400 Anusim. The Gemara says that they killed themselves. He brings a raya from Tzidkio HaMelech. He brings kama v'kama rayas that suicide, where the person is in great pain, is mutter al pi halacha. It says, you see, Shaul HaMelech went to Gan Eden. The 400, the Gemara says, there were 400 boys and girls who were captured. Nasu kal v'chayme ba'atzmam. The Gemara, I think it's in Gittin, around Nunvavish. And they says they jumped off the ship, and it says they're all mezumanim l'chayei l'mabas. He said, he brings many rayas that you're allowed to commit suicide in times of either great pain, or were you afraid it's going to have a great spiritually negative impact? They would be raped in that case. But that's the conclusion of the Besamim Rosh. I'm sorry, continue, Rabbi Wiener.
Right. Yeah, well, but the Besamim Rosh is a big controversy. I mean, it's pretty well known that it's likely a forgery. And the Chassam Sofer right there, the Pesachei Tshuva quotes that he was not comfortable with that psak. And so it's quoted in the Pesachei Tshuva, but it's difficult to be somech on the Besamim Rosh Halacha L'maisa. In fact, when I asked Rav Asher Weiss, he said we would not be somech on that.
Well, the Shulchan Aruch, you see clearly the Shulchan Aruch is in somech on the Besamim Rosh.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Right. So there is a marsham. It's not as explicit, but it does say mipnei yisurim. It's not mavet atzel adas. And he basically says it's ka'omer mutter. And he says in that case they felt that the yisurim were pushing the person so much that ein moni miminu kol davar, and you could bury them and you could sit shiva and everything. And halacha l'maisa, that's what we did in these cases. We don't encourage it, obviously, and we're still very disappointed when this happens, and we've developed, you know, ways of trying to discourage people. But that was a challenging shaila when it first came up, but I think that Marsham says clearly what a number of the poskim that I spoke to kind of intuitively assumed would be the psak. But it's quite
and
a shaila.
And I'm curious, it's also a shaila, do you say Kaddish for such a person?
Uh-huh, right, same thing.
It's similar, same. And the Sechsam Seifer in Yeridei, I think it's in around Shin Chaf area. By the way, the Sechsam Seifer,
yeah.
On this very Besamim Reish, the Sechsam Seifer comments that this is a proof that the Besamim Reish is a forgery and it's not the Rush, because he says, I can't imagine, this is so controversial, this tshuva, that he,
right.
On this tshuva, the Sechsam Seifer comments, I believe the Seifer is a forgery.
Uh-huh, right, yeah. Right. Yeah, there's another issue that came up. It's halacha lemaisa in other areas, but this issue of assisted suicide brought it to the forefront, which is, you know, interestingly, in American law, in California law, the person has to be terminal. So they define terminal, chaye shah, they define in California as 6 months to live, just like for hospice, which is what the Israeli dying patient law concluded. That's where Rosh Weiss also paskins is chaye shah. So the doctor has to be able to say that this patient's dying within 6 months. Now, we had the first day this became legal last June in California, we actually had a patient who 15 days before it became legal already requested it, said he would be able to do it on the first day when it became legal, because you have to have the 15-day waiting period. He was so anxious to do it. And fascinatingly, so now it's been 13 months since then, and his doctors approved. His doctors gave him the medication, made the prescription. He's still alive. We had somebody who came to me and confided in me as a rabbi. I mean, I won't give specific details, but this person basically said, you know, I have a terminal illness. I know my doctor has told me that it can be treated and I won't be terminal, but, you know, I have a hard life and I have depression and I've kind of wanted out for a long time. And so I'm gonna forego the medications, which will then cause me to be in the category of terminal. And then I can engage in this act, which in halacha is not chayesha. If someone can be treated, that's not chayesha. But the
right,
doctor
so you're
is
asking,
frequently...
But you're asking a very complex question, Rabbi Wiener is asking. In other words,
yeah.
If somebody, is a person considered a ma'abed atzmo ladas, is it considered suicide, if not you do something proactively, but you do it b'sheva al tase.
Right.
All right. If you do it without being proactive, you just say, look, I don't want to undergo the treatments. Is a ma'abed asvil adas b'sheva al tase considered a ma'abed asvil adas legabe all these halachas, legabe kfura, legabe, and it's a big bruaha in the paiskim, where, you know, and there are two opinions on that. Yeah,
uh-huh.
So that would basically be your question over here, right?
Yeah, and part of what I learned from this is that, you know, frequently when we discuss halachic issues and we discuss chaye shah versus chaye olam and what's the definition, a year, 6 months, 2 months, we talk in numbers. And I realized that, you know, our definition of chaye shah has to be more than a number. Something like, you know, whatever expert opinion says this person will die in a short time and they have like a lethal and progressive disease and despite treatment they're still dying. It has to include more verbiage than just numbers of months, because that can be manipulated, and also it's not always correct. This patient over a year ago was considered chaye shah by the doctors, 6 months to live, and he's still walking around talking. He has this illness, but he's lived over a year.
Now,
so
by the way, Reb Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, who was your Rebbe, who gave you, I'll tell you, share with you something interesting. On a ma'abed asvil adas by refusing treatment, so they bring a raya from the Ran, that the Ran says if somebody makes a promise that he won't sleep for 3 days, he says you force him to, or he won't drink for 3 days. It's in the Sugya in Dharam on Shavuos on Daf Chaf Hei. And the Ran says, you're going to be, why do you force him? Because it's going to be suicide, and he's going to be over of achas dimcha melanafshu seichem edreish, which is where we learn the din of suicide from.
Right.
So he seems to imply that refusing, you know, starving yourself to death is it would be suicide, too, even though you're not doing anything proactive. Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, it is interesting, and Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg says, brings Rias, no, you would not, other Rishonim argue, that would not be considered a suicide. However, you would be over the Issa, very interestingly, of voice Samod al Damriecha, don't stand by where your brother's blood is spilled. And he says, it doesn't matter, your brother could be somebody else, or your brother could be yourself. And the whole Issa of Lo Samod al Damriecha is about being passive, is about refraining from doing something. So he says, you may not be over the Issa of suicide, but you're certainly over the Issa of Lo Samod al Damriecha, according to everybody, which I thought was a very interesting comment.
Yeah. I'll tell you another psak we got from Zalman Nechemya that was very interesting, had a related shaila, but a little different. One of the questions that comes up, you know, even from people, you know, things happen that, you know, we wouldn't have wanted to happen, but something's happened, or a family member or something. So, for example, sometimes, Rahman al-Atslan, unfortunately, people are cremated, or they donate their bodies for research, things like that. And the questions become, let's say that we are going to sit Shiva for this person. So when does Shiva begin? Let's say a body is donated to a medical school for research. We had this shayla not too long ago, and I asked Rav Zalman Nechemya, when does Shiva begin?
Rabbi Wiener is saying that halach is that Shiva always begins after the kfura.
Exactly.
Right. But if there's no kfura because they're doing medical research, when does the Shiva begin? That's a fascinating shayla.
Yeah, so it was in that case, Rav Zalman Nechemya told us it was based on a rush in brachos. He said it's basically once the family has given up on retrieval of a body, they would begin Shiva right then at that point. So he says, he compared that to this case. He says, look, once they've given the body over to the researchers, even though they didn't necessarily approve of this or want this, but the patient was able to, convince that whoever that this was what was going to happen, they begin Shiva then.
Wow.
There were other poskim that said that they don't begin Shiva until the kavura happens, whenever that's going to be, and they're actually onanim the entire time. That could be weeks until the burial.
Rabbi Wiener is suggesting from Rav Goldberg, very interestingly, I'm playing color commentary, I hope you don't mind, that's what they pay me for, is that, let's say somebody says a nifter to Eretz Yisrael. So when does the Shiva begin? So the halacha is, for the family that remains behind, the Shiva begins immediately, even though the kfura happens post. You know, it could be a number of days post, right? If the body buys out on Thursday, the kura could be, or it could be Matzah Shabbos, it could be 2 days, but right away, for the family, why? Because the whole din of aninus is while they're being Isaac with the kura. Once they've handed it off to other family members, so he wants to say the same thing would be when they give it over for research. I mean, obviously the argument would be, but over here, there still would be a halachic requirement to bury them, and they didn't hand it off to anybody who's doing it al pi halacha. They abrogated their responsibilities. So he's saying it doesn't matter. Once you hand it off, once you sort of miyayish from kfura, the halacha is on the halacha is shiva begins. And who argues on him?
I haven't seen. I mean, he's the one who we asked. But in discussing the shayla with people, I've been told, and I've seen, I don't remember which postgame argue on him, to be honest, but I've seen that there are those who said it's the entire time until the kvura.
So which means that if somebody donates their body to others, let's say they give away the kidneys, the liver, to this, and the other person lives for 60 years, so it could be 60 years later they get a phone call and say, hello, you have to start sitting shiva today.
Right.
Sounds a little strange, no?
Yeah. And cremation also, you know, so what happens with cremation when, you know, it used to be, I mean, it still is in some ways, that if someone is cremated, God forbid, then there's no Shiva, no Kvura. But, there are posts going to say, this one I brought to Rav Hirschel Schechter, if someone's cremated not out of apikorsis, They didn't know, and they chose this because it's cheaper or something like that, and they hadn't learned, and they do this, and there are family members who want to sit Shiva. So he told us that they could sit Shiva for the person, but then the question became, so when is the Shiva, from the day of the cremation? Or let's say they do bury the ashes, that's usually what we do. Would the Shiva begin then, at the Kvura? But he said it's from the time of the cremation itself, because it's not certain that there's a chiyuv of the kavura, and because really we shouldn't be involved with the kavura, so it's from the time of the cremation that would begin shiva.
Wow. So you have real interesting shilas. Could you share a few more? This is, I'm sure, for most of the crowd, as for me, these are shilas we've never heard before.
Well, so a very common shila that I think all chaplains deal with is the following case. I mean, a lot of this stuff, you know, it's really bidyevit. It's not stuff that we want to have happening, but it's just a reality that's happening. So, for example, let's say you have a patient who's dying, but they're on a respirator, and the respirator's keeping them alive. And they're not asking a shayla, can they remove the respirator? We know that's a whole sugya, and that's a very complicated issue. But they didn't ask a shayla, but they're in the hospital, and, you know, they're a Jewish family, and they would love to have some support or someone to say prayers, someone to be with them. So they call for a chaplain to come be there. And the way the referral comes to my office is, there's a patient who's going to be terminally extubated, but they're waiting for you. Once you show up, then we'll pull the plug, so to speak. And
wow.
And so it's totally in my arrival. And does my arrival imply consent that I'm okay with it? And should I take, if I'm going to go, should I take my time and go slowly, at least keep them alive a little bit longer? Obviously, if I don't show up at all, I will lose my job. I mean, it's a requirement. But it's very difficult. Should I send someone else? Should I send a non-Jewish chaplain instead of me? That's a big shaila that chaplains have.
Wow. You know, there's a story with the Brisker Rav. You know the story,
yes,
right?
Yes.
You want to share the story with the Yalom?
Share it. I'm curious to hear how you share it, because there's different girsas.
The way I heard the story with the Brisker Rav is that there was a prisoner in Brisk that he had done something nefarious. We don't know whether it was a plot, or he was chayiv or not, and they said that they're putting him to death. And he asked that his last wish, to give every prisoner a last wish, and his last wish was to see the Brisker Rav. So to have a chaplain there, to have, and they came to the Brisker Rav, and they said, we'd like you to come. He wants a chaplain there, and you're the rabbi of the city. And the Brisker Rav said, I'm not going. And the governor of the city sent soldiers and policemen and all kinds of threats, and the Brisker Rav said, I'm not going. And they couldn't get him to go. And I believe the end of the story is that somehow the guy wasn't put to death. His misa was nidcha. I don't know if you heard. That's the way I heard it.
Right, but that's the machlokas, is what happened at the end, if he was actually killed or not. But the point is, we see the
I don't think it's relevant. I don't think it's relevant to the... but that's, you've heard that story too, right?
Yeah, because in fact, one of the first postgame that I asked about this, Shilas quoted me that story and said, based on that misa, you should not go. So at that time, I told my boss, I said, I'm uncomfortable with this, and I don't know if I could go. And they've been very respectful. I don't have to be Mechal Shabbos for my job or anything else that I'm not comfortable with, and they're very good about that. And he said, you know, this is something you're getting called about once or twice a day. How could we have a chaplain here who can't respond to a question that comes up once or twice a day? That's going to be difficult for us. So I continued to ask around a little bit. I mean, I told the first postdoc that I asked that I'm, you know, asking a few people, and I'm trying to figure out what our policy should be. One of the postdocs we discussed this was Gedalia Dov Schwartz in Chicago. He had a very interesting take on it. He said that he asked a simple question. He said, when you show up in the room, are you there as a chaplain or are you there as a postdoc? He said, Kol Zaman, that they see you as pastoral care, and you're clear about that. You're not there to condone the act, and you can't say you condone it, but you're there to provide comfort and support for them. He doesn't see a problem with it. I also asked Rav Usher Weiss. He also said, you don't need to delay. Some postgame I asked said, you know, okay, you should go, but take your time. As much as you think is reasonable, at least, you know, every moment of life is precious.
So what was what was Rav Usher's logic? Why isn't it a gram for Ritzicha?
Well, if there's no gram of Bayadayim there, I mean, I'm not telling them it's okay. I'm not telling them to do it. It's something that's going to happen anyways. What he said was, he said, look, if you don't go, is it still going to happen? I said, yes. I said, but what will happen? They'll be mad at you. That's all it will accomplish. He said, and you never, when people are in an emotional, stressed out state, you never know the type of pain it's going to cause. He said he had someone in his shul, someone who once asked him a similar shaila about themselves, that they wanted to end their life, and they wanted a heter. And he said, I can't give you a heter for that. And the person said, okay, I understand you can't give me a hefter, then at least daven for my neshama after I do it anyways. Can you do that? So he said, wow, that is a, you're putting me in a bind here, because that's kind of like a little bit of a hetter I'm giving. It's like, if I tell you I'm going to daven for your soul, if you do it, that's like you're putting me in a difficult situation. But he said, what would happen if I said no? I refuse to daven for you. The person's already in a psychologically difficult situation. They're stressed out. They're upset. It's just going to cause more anger at Rabbanim. It's going to cause more anger against Yiddishkeit, against the Kaddish Baruch Hu. It's not going to solve the problem. So he said he told him he would daven for him. And he said that was a few years ago. The person's still alive. And he said to me, he said, you know, when you go there, he said, instead of them being upset at religion because you refuse to go, maybe you could have a hashpa. Because frequently when I'm there with them, so we say some tefillos, things like that, and then they'll say something to me like, we have questions about burial. Or someone will say, oh, we're going to be cremate him. And I could say, oh, why are you going to do that? And they say, oh, you know, it's so too expensive. And I say, well, what if I could get you burial, traditional Jewish burial, for the same price or cheaper? Would you consider it? And they say, oh, if that's the case, yes. And all of a sudden, we save the person from being cremated. We encourage traditional avelos and tahara, tahrichin, and everything. And sometimes we can actually save something. We can. There is a positive benefit that can happen. And he said to me, and maybe once out of 1,000 times you go, they're going to say to you, Rabbi, is this allowed? And you're not going to be able to say yes. And they'll listen and they'll say, oh, you know what? I didn't realize. And maybe they won't do once in 1,000 times they won't do it. And you'll save a life. So he said, I think you should go.
Fascinating, Shaul. Give us one more example, Rabbi Weiner. We're almost out of time.
Sure. I'll tell you a Choshen Mishpat. There's two Shailas, that's kind of one. Choshen Mishpat, end of life Shailas that I hadn't expected beforehand. There were two. I'll tell you the shorter one first and the longer one second. They come together. The first one was a patient had made it clear that he wants to be buried in Israel. And then when he died, his wife got her Yerusha. It was only enough to cover the burial in Israel. And she had nothing else left. She wants to know, can she disobey his wishes, bury him in the States for much cheaper so that she can keep at least a little bit of Yerusha, because otherwise she has nothing. We had another Shiloh, and then we'll come back to that. We had another Shiloh.
This would be the spouse. This was the spouse or the child?
The spouse.
He wanted to be buried in Israel, which would have left him basically bereft. It would have left her with nothing.
Right.
Now I'm curious, would have he had enough for a ksuba?
That's a good question. It wasn't a lot of money. I mean,
so I'm saying that, you know, he's mishubit for her ksuba.
Right.
So l'chayra al ksuba, she would have a chiyav. That shibud supersedes his right to be buried in Eretz Yisrael.
Right. Well, and that's what we did. I mean, in the end, he was buried here, and she kept the rest.
Yeah.
We had a woman came by my office one day, and she's in the hospital with her mother, who's dying, and she knows that it's a matter of days, and she's the only surviving child. She had a brother who's no longer alive, and so now the person who's dying just has one daughter who comes by my office. She says the following, Shiloh. She has a child, and she has a nephew. So this is the person who's dying has two grandchildren, and the person who's dying just shared her will with her daughter, and it was as follows. She wants to split up her estate between the grandchildren with one rule, one caveat. If any of them marries someone who's not Jewish, they're out of the will. That's the caveat. The will obviously starts from the day she dies. She's about to die. She's dying within a day or two. That day, the reason she comes to my office is because she got a call from her nephew. I get a mazel tov. I just got engaged, and you can guess who he's engaged to. You know, it's not deserving of a mazel tov. And now she wants to know, technically, he will not be married yet when the patient dies. And in fact, the patient herself, you're not able to inform her anymore. She's really like almost a ghost face. So does she have to follow the will and the spirit of the will, which is that he shouldn't get, or the letter of the law, which is that he's not married yet, so give it to him.
Wow. Rabbi Weiner, it's fascinating, and It's just been really very interesting having you on. These are some of the most interesting shilohs we've heard.
My pleasure. There's lots and lots more. I'm happy to share them with you another time.
Well, thank you very much, and we would hope to have you on another time. From Los Angeles, California, the senior rabbi of Cedars-Sinai's Medical Center, Rabbi Werner, thank you for joining us.
Before we sign off, let's go to our listeners. Here are some of the calls we've gotten this week. I think you may enjoy them. Interesting, varied, from all over the world. Let's go to the phone.
Hello, I was listening to your program this week on Chelis, and I want to tell you I was very, very impressed how you kept even-handed with it. You brought both Tzadim, both Machria, both Tzadim. That's the way it should be. Thank you very much. Cold.
I try to be impartial. Sometimes my impartiality bleeds out, but I'm glad if you think this time I was impartial. And I really don't think that I have an obligation to. I apologize to you, my dear listener, but you know, I'm human, and I have very strong feelings on some of these topics. I actually do wear tchelis. In fact, I wear all three. I wear Tosfos, the Rambam, and the Ravid. I wear all three. I change them off. I wear Tosfos is for the most part because that's what the Mishnah Berurah says. That you know, the four chutzin in total, so two actually. But I'm glad I came across as impartial.
Yes, hello, Shalom Aleichem. I'm calling regarding the last show on the Shabbos. You had two sides of the tchelis issue. I want to commend you on bringing on Rabbi Bakken, who really expressed himself so well and really proves the point that we have tchelis back in existence today. And the other thing is, everyone keeps on talking about gedolim, 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 and gedolim. This was my idea of chachamim. They forget about all the chachamim that actually do approve and wear tchelis. Israel Rebelki was not a gadol. Rebel Yiber Vachpag was not a gadol. Rebel Kalman Epstein is not a gadol. Rebel Moshe Mordechai Karp, not only is he a gadol, but he's also a Talmud of Rebel Yashiv. And he said over that his Rebel Yashiv was mocking that he should wear it. And so Nachum Eisenstein claimed that Yashiv was very upset about it, but that's not the opinion of the Moshe Mordechai Karp, and he's a gadol and he wears it. And Rav Zalman Lechemi Goldberg is a gadol of the Torah, Rav Zalman Abbas Azen, and he wears it. So there are plenty of gadolim that wear. Shrei Devlitsky from Nebrak, one of the elder senior gadolim around today, he wears it. He said all the people should wear. So therefore, the senior gadolim is totally full, and maybe there's a mitzvah of Shmaya to the Gedolim who do wear. Who's to say, you know, who should go like them? Cover your eyes to a Chumrah, and you don't lose anything, and nothing wrong with doing it. And thank you again for your Zikr Rabban, letting people know the truth.
So here's interesting. Here we have one listener who lists, I don't know, 10 or 15 Gedolim who wear Tchelis, and he's going to be followed right afterwards by another caller who says there's not a single one. It's interesting how you bring two Jews into a room and you end up with a whole bunch of opinions.
Dr. Tchelis, I wanted to say that after all the shows and all the dresses and all the nice things, the mice, out of all the Peskim in this generation and the generation before, there's not a single one, not a single one that came out and said that everybody needs to learn Tchelis. And that means a lot. Thank you.
Hello, Rav David. I'm calling from Yerushalayim. I just want to say I really enjoy your show. The only problem was about this week. It seems as if your Devar Torah was coming to speak against the Rabbanim who were speaking about the importance of Messiah. You're saying like Chadash Mutam and Torah. I'm saying it sounds very sweet, but I'm saying it's a Chasim Sefer. The Chasim Sefer himself is Chadash Asim and Torah. Thank you very much.
My dear Paul, I believe you, I didn't communicate so well. I said that on one hand we say Chadash Asim and Atayra, to accept the dictum of the Chum Sofer famously used, against the Reform. On the other hand, when Sarah Shanira introduced teaching girls, basically opened up all the Beis Yaakov, and we talked about what an incredible thing this is and how it changed the world. What would Yiddishkeit be today if girls didn't go to school? We said it was embraced. So I left everybody with a question. I begged for an answer. When do we say Chadash Asa Mana Torah? And when do we say Chadash Vadarab? It's not only not Asa, but it's fantastic, and it causes Harbatzas Torah and the Kiyum of Yiddishkeit. Where would Kohl be without the great Kohl wives who are, you know, basically have the biggest imaginable Siris Nefesh because they were taught in school and seminary, etc.? And that's the question. I don't know the answer, and I beg of you, if you have an answer, please share it with me. But I was chas v'shalom not disagreeing with how could somebody argue with the great Chum Sofer.
Yes, shalom aleichem. Thank you for your wonderful program. Rabbi Deutsch of the Living Torah Museum said he presented a list of criteria to Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky of whether it's the Tchelis, and it failed one of the tests. And Rabbi Chaim said, okay, that's it. It's not it. And he mentioned that to Rabbi Yashim. Rabbi Yashim got really excited and grabbed him by the arm and said, oh, I knew it.
We will, Bli Neda, have Rabbi Deutsch on the phone, and he can answer the question. And what I would like to actually do is have Rabbi Deutsch on the phone and have Rabbi Barkin, who's the expert on this from Lakewood, and have them sort of some sort of like a answer to our debate between them. I think that would be fantastic. We have a real Talmud Chacham here, bringing two rayas from the great Minchas Halos, so let's listen to what he has to say.
Hello. I've listened to the radio show this week, Motz Shabbos. It was really impressive. There's a Besedes Tziva from Minchas Halos, the Daya Gimel, Sermon Mem Gimel, where he talks about Shlich HaKen. And he says that Al-Vabe, even if you have a bird, which is a suffix, if it's a kosher bird or not, and therefore you wouldn't eat it because we don't have him straight on it. But he says, Rabbi, there's no shower that when it comes to the mitzvah of Shlich HaKen, you're mechiyas to do the mitzvah, even though if it's not kosher, you're not mechiyas. But outside that it is a kosher bird, you're mechiyas. So there's no shower about it that you're mechiyas to do Shlich HaKen, even when there's no mitzvah. And he goes into a different shower of why there wouldn't be a mechiyas, because the master, we don't eat it, maybe the Matthias that we don't eat it is good and there should not be a kiyas. But Avada, he says, and I have plenty of other eyes too, but I'm not going to say them all on the phone. I just think it would maybe be a tayelet for the oilam to hear this Menkis Aluza who says the fetish that there's no problem with Masoida and other having Matthias to go against the Masoida when it comes to him as professor. And again, I want to thank you for the beautiful radio show. I listen to it very. I've listened to maybe almost all of the shows that you've given, and thank you very much.
I was listening to your show about Tchelis, and I must say that there was is a terrible mistake being made upon the part of Rabbi Lichtenstein, and that is that there's this assumption, which is the Farish in the Rambam and the Sefri, Fakert, that there can only be two colors, Tchelos HaKol Ilam, that make the same color. If Mefurish in the Rambam, Perpez Halacha Aleph, Kol Shal Yinitzva Ba'isa Tzvi Apostle, it's this Afi Sheikainer Rekiyak, you want to tell me, Be'istis, or Be'shachar, or Be'shar HaMashacharim. So that's at least four, Istis, Shachar, Shar HaMashacharim. Now, if you look in the Sefri, which is in the Makar of the Rambam, Parsha Shlach, it says exactly the same thing. And if you look in the Kesef Mishnah, Afanart, Peri Beis, Halacha Ches, Halacha Tzitzis, he says that Chazal possibly used Lashon Kol Ilam to be called all types of psulim. And Rav Moshe Feinstein writes like that, basically the same thing in the Tshuva, and Yeradei Chelik Beis, Simon Kuflama Beis. So this is an erroneous assumption. It's simply false that the color can only come from two places. The color can come from many places. There's no way in the world that this thing can be the right thing. I have much, much more to say about this, but I think this is one of the biggest scams out there. Thank you.
I would like to respond, but unfortunately it is 1 o'clock Erev Shabbos, and if we don't get downloaded before Shabbos, we will miss our deadlines. I will believe they to respond at a later date. But I believe that it's an error, what you're saying. Thank you.